You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight podcast right here for Multimedia Live. We are your weekly podcast and destination for some of the top business and economics news, the trends, what's going on in the headlines in and around South Africa and the economy. And this week, we thought that we would focus on monetary policy in South Africa, specifically around the Reserve Bank. There's been a lot going on, and this week we have an interest rate decision. The Monetary Policy Committee is meeting at the moment, and they'll be delivering a decision tomorrow about whether or not interest rates will be going up. Last week we had the Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Khanyago being appointed for yet another term, and we're just going to be discussing this. And on the line we are joined by an expert to help us guide our discussion. We have Tumisho Greta from Novare. She is an economic strategist working under the Actuaries and Consultants division. How are you, Tumisho?
Hi, Madiwa. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm very well, thanks.
No, thank you so much for being with us. So just for us to begin our discussion, the Reserve Bank Governor, he's been appointed for yet another term. Could the President have chosen, someone else at this particular point, or is Lesetša still just the best man for the job?
At this point, I honestly do feel that Governor Lesetša Khanyago is definitely the best man for the job. Remember, the South African Reserve Bank has obviously been under the spotlight in terms of questions around its mandate and its independence. And one of the key things that business wants to see is continuity and stability. So, by reaffirming your stance to the current monetary policy mandate and having the current governor being re-elected, you basically ensure that continuity in the monetary policy setting. Looking at the construct of the monetary policy in itself, you've seen that there is a long line of succession where you see that the deputy governors also possess a wealth of, of a wealth of knowledge and also have extensive networks. So really being able to tap into those particular networks at the moment and just ensuring that the right signals are sent. So we obviously did see a positive reaction by the rand against the US dollar, although, admittedly the rand was strong during the course of that week, but this also just gave an extra boost and I think also was a nod from the international investors and from local investors that we are on the right track and definitely this was the best man for the job.
Could the president have chosen someone else? I'm just thinking to myself about who else would be qualified right now. We've already established that Lesetša is probably the best person for the job. But are there any other possible candidates that perhaps we could be looking, to maybe after the current term comes to an end?
I mean, after the current term, the issue around succession planning, I don't think will be an issue within the South African Reserve Bank. Because again, if you look at how it's put together, you do have a strong line. So looking at the deputy governors that are currently being elected, they're both very well qualified, and either of them would be able to take over the reins. And again, ensure that in terms of credibility and continuity, we will be able to see, the current monetary policy stance continue and the manner in which, monetary policy is being implemented also is maintained. We do have any issues there. Obviously, we have had, deputy governor leave. We've had about two exits at the moment, and we have had a new member join the MPC. We're currently made up of five. The other two positions are probably likely to be filled internally. But in terms of succession planning, really, it wouldn't be an issue. And I think either one of the deputy governors that have been chosen would obviously make a suitable candidate for a future governor. Also very exciting is the fact that we do have a female there in the running. So, obviously this also does bode well in terms of increasing diversity within the financial sector, but, also just, putting forward a female role model for African women to look at, African men and women in general.
The actual position itself, how does it fit into the macroeconomic stability for the country? I understand that governance at the central bank is one of the factors that rating agencies, for example, actually take into account when thinking about the investability of a sovereign. So how does this position actually play into that?
So I think what's really important is if you look at the South African Reserve Bank, like any institution, it's going to be a collective effort in order to, you know, to get this through. But obviously who's at the helm is going to be very important. So remember, the mandate of the South African Reserve Bank will be inflation targeting. And yes, of course, you also have to take into account the well-being of all South African citizens. So just want to take a step back in terms of getting some history and to give some context on some of the points I'm going to make. So South Africa adopted, you know, inflation targeting back in 2000, and they really moved away from the exchange rate targeting. But to actually effectively implement inflation targeting within the monetary policy framework, the central bank needs to be free to choose which instrument it wants to use in order to target inflation. So yes, you cannot ignore government, but fiscal policy considerations really shouldn't dictate monetary policy. So that's one thing. This is what's important. The second thing, which also speaks to the point of the governor and why this is also quite important, is that you need to have the willingness of authorities to not target any other areas other than inflation targeting. So you shouldn't have them being preoccupied with creation of employment, wages, or any other factors other than inflation targeting. Of course, they will look at other factors, but that needs to be the core focus. So if you had a governor who was more inclined to be swayed by, you know, what's happening in the political realm and move away from what the mandate is there to do, it would actually cast a lot of doubt on the effectiveness and the integrity of the mandate of inflation targeting in general. Also, you know that the governor has the deciding vote at the Monetary Policy Committee. So again, if he was not looking at any other thing other than what the mandate has been put forward as, again, that would put, you know, what they're trying to achieve into question. And again, you know, South Africa looks at inflation targeting, and that is what we've had since the year 2000. So this is how the role of the governor, amongst other things that obviously that the governor does do. But this is one of the reasons why we would need to ensure that we've got the right people for those positions.
Actually, on the point of inflation targeting, what's the general feeling about the current state of monetary policy in South Africa at the moment? You mentioned the fact that we moved away from an exchange rate targeting regime over to an inflation targeting regime. Are interest rates still the best tool to use to be actually controlling inflation, or what other tools does the Reserve Bank have at the moment to actually take forward its mandate?
I mean, if you look at what's been able to be achieved over the last couple of years with inflation targeting, one would argue obviously we have been able to keep inflation in check. If you look at where inflation has come at since the last 6 months of the year, we have been around that band of 4.5%. Remember, the South African Reserve Bank targets between 3 to 6, which is 4.5%. So we are within that target, which would make us eligible for a rate cut purely because of one, you know, the inflation expectations have come down, and secondly, we haven't had significant rand weakness. So I think the general sense around what the expectations are for interest rates is that they should be coming down. Other indicators that obviously that they do take into account is, you know, the oil price, what is happening with other global central banks, which we've seen that tilts also become quite dovish in that they have become a lot more accommodative, that they're not looking to increase interest rates and they're actually looking to cut interest rates. So I think what is important about, you know, what South Africa, or rather the South African Reserve Bank bank continues to do is to stick to what they've said. So I think one interest rate cut, for example, won't necessarily do the world of good in that it's not going to spur this amazing economic revival. A series of cuts would be something that would that is likely to have a bigger impact. But again, there are other things that you do need to consider. There are still risks to the fiscus, and that is something that monetary policy cannot play a role in. We can't shy away from the role of the government in doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
Successful stories are when we have monetary policy working together in conjunction with fiscal policy. So there are obviously things from a fiscal perspective that can be done. But I think that, you can't say to look to the South African Reserve Bank, an institution that has credibility, that is working, that has been highlighted by credit rating agencies, for example, as one of the pillars or one of the key institutions that are currently contributing to, the positive outlooks or affirming our current investment grade. And by that, I'm talking about Moody's in this instance.
Yeah.
You can't take away, the fact that it is one of the institutions that is doing well. So let's not, move away from how much role that the government and the fiscal stance also has to play. Monetary policy can certainly cannot do this alone.
And then tomorrow, can we expect, because we've already started that discussion around the MPC and interest rates, and that decision is coming out tomorrow, and given everything you've just said, can we expect a rate hike tomorrow, or are we likely to see things remaining as is? And can South Africans actually afford a hike at this point?
I would put my neck on the line and say that we are not going to get a rate hike. I would be very surprised if we got one. A lot of the things or some of the indicators that we've seen, for example, if you look at the South African yield curve, which is can actually tell you a lot of information about what investors are thinking, what the market is thinking. So the short end of the curve, which really just looks at maturity of bonds, say between 1 to 3 years, for example, they are pricing in an interest rate cut already, because you see that those rates have already come down. Whereas on the long end of the curve, which is the longer dated bonds, we're still seeing yields or interest rates on those particular bonds being kept elevated.
Yeah.
This really is just a factor of them saying, look, there's still some risk that we see here in terms of the country and its fiscal situation, which we've spoken about. So one, I do think that we are likely to see an interest rate cut, although there are factors that could make the South African Reserve Bank a little bit hesitant or reluctant to act on that. And one of those things is what we've mentioned around South Africa's fiscal situation, the pressure that state-owned enterprises are putting on the fiscus being one of them. I do think that if they were going to do a cut, this is probably one of the best times to do it, because if you were looking to do an interest rate cut in, say, September, this would be very much ahead of the October medium-term budget policy statement. And from what we've seen, we're not likely to have very positive numbers. In fact, we're likely to see some fiscal slippage come through.
Yeah.
So to cut at a time where we're not expecting fantastic news from a fiscal standpoint, from when we're expecting not fantastic news for a fiscal standpoint, can be an issue. Another thing there to look at is what the MPC has said in previous meetings. So they've got their own internal model of inflation known as the quarterly projection model, or their QPM, and this basically gives you the implied path of where interest rates are likely to go. And then the last meeting they did say that they're expecting, according to this model, which can change, that there's likely to be a cut any time between, say, now and up until the end of, say, the first quarter of 2020. So this is very much something that we are expecting to see. Again, I do think that a series of cuts would be more beneficial to South African consumers as opposed to just one. But again, that little bit of confidence that we can get, we will take. Luckily, we have had inflation coming in lower than expected. And also, we haven't had the rand weaken significantly. If anything, it has been supported by the international backdrop, with some of the global central banks not increasing interest rates. So that's also been a supportive factor. Also seen oil being a little bit range bound because there are so many factors that are currently at play. So that's also been one of those factors that has helped. So a lot to consider, but I do think a cut is definitely on the table. If they were going to not change rates, then they would look at it from, you know, from the fiscal standpoint and what the impact would be then on the RAND in the case that we had worse than expected numbers coming out of the budget speech, et cetera, et cetera. So those are just some of the things to consider. But yeah, I do think a cut is on the cards for tomorrow. But South African consumers at the moment, a hike, oh my goodness, I think I do stand with them when I say that we certainly can't really afford one right now. I mean, we've had high administered prices. We've seen, you know, unemployment is still uncomfortably high, low growth. I mean, we do need to have a little bit of confidence come through. And yeah, an interest rate hike would certainly not be beneficial for us
at this particular point. So one of the things I would like you to perhaps help us with, because I think it's very good that we have someone with your experience and knowledge on the line, is how much the US Fed's interest rate decisions feed into the SARB's decisions, and also maybe just a bit of explanation around some of the noise that's been made around the world, especially in the US, about an inverted yield curve.
So this, we're actually seeing how the US has translated into our own markets. I spoke earlier about the fact that we have had the RAND doing particularly well. So at a time when the US is hiking or is in a hiking cycle, so to speak, what we would typically see is that other central banks are likely to also follow suit, or it makes it quite hard for them to be in a cycle where they would cut rates. They are most likely to either stay pat or not change or increase interest rates. What's also associated with an interest rate hiking cycle is a stronger US dollar. So if you've got a stronger US dollar, that also puts pressure on our local currency or other emerging market currencies such as the RAND. Now, the fact that the Fed, the US Fed, has, you know, essentially now did a bit of a U-turn and thinks where economic conditions aren't right, we've got issues around trade wars, etc. So we need to ensure that we keep this economic expansion going. Therefore, we are not going to increase interest rates. So maybe we're possibly looking at a cut. So that gives, you know, other central banks and other emerging market central banks as well the space to cut interest rates if their own, you know, domestic environment also allows for that. So some of the big things that has, you know, raised a lot of flags around why the South African, I mean, the US central bank should be cutting rates. They look at specific indicators, so they look at economic numbers and what they're saying. So we've seen purchasing managers index indices that have actually come down. That is one of the things that they would look at as a leading indicator. They look at economic growth with GDP numbers. One of the other things they would look at is the, you know, what's happening in the FX market or what's happening in the bond market and the yield curve in particular. So the big thing around the inversion of the yield curve has been really big. So historically, before every recession that we have seen, there has been an inversion in the US yield curve. But with that said, not every inversion of the yield curve has led to a recession. So we also have to be very careful how we read the inversion. Also, where it's inverted is one thing that we need to consider. What we saw was a partial inversion. So it doesn't mean the entire yield curve was inverted. It means a partial or a portion of the yield curve was inverted. So that is something that you do need to take into consideration. And the part that's inverted isn't usually the one that raises the alarm bells, although there are still some concerns, and concerns are warranted. But I think that is one of the things that certainly got a lot of bond traders on edge, investors on edge, thinking, is this possibly an early warning signal that we could be looking at a recession. President Trump and Xi Jinping and President Xi Jinping is that they're not coming to any sort of agreement at the moment, so it's likely to detract even further from growth. And we're seeing these PMI numbers dragging lower. So there was a host of things that have been playing into this rhetoric that we've seen with the U.S. Federal Reserve possibly looking to cut interest rates at this meeting in July. So that is why, you know, there was this preoccupation with the inversion of the yield curve. But again, I do caution, you cannot just look at one indicator and say, yes, it's a recession. You've got to look at other metrics. You know, you've got to look at other metrics too. One of the things that we like to look at is we look at a series of where these indicators are coming through. So the manufacturing sector we've seen has come under pressure, yes, because of the trade wars have definitely given an impact. But where we are seeing issues or where red flags start to go off is when businesses and consumers are impacted. And that comes through in employment numbers. That also comes through with other business indicators. So far, employment in developed markets and in the U.S. remains resilient. So that is also one of the key things that says, hang on, yes, the world is slowing. Yes, there are risks, but it does not mean that we are in a recession at the moment.
And then lastly, I thought we could just briefly get your thoughts, because much has been said, at least in the political arena, about nationalizing the Saab. But it seems some of the dialogue has changed gears somewhat, and there's been some chatter around a state-owned bank.
Yeah, so look, around the Saab, a couple of things. There are two issues around the Saab. So there is the nationalization of the Saab and there's the mandate. The nationalization of the Saab isn't really so much of an issue because that actually doesn't have an impact on the mandate. The mandate is what we spoke about right at the top, which is inflation targeting. So if that was what was going to change, that is what's going to cause a lot of nervousness because, again, it talks to the continuity of the policy that we have seen. So that's been affirmed as we've seen the new, you know, the new deputy governors and the governor being reappointed. In terms of a state-owned bank, I mean, there are a lot of views around this, but I do have some concerns. I mean, if the view is to ensure that, for example, we are able to accelerate transformation and see ownership in more, you know, black citizens, if we're able to increase, you know, financial inclusion, I do hear all of those arguments and those are warranted. But however, some of my concerns come with the funding of the state-owned bank, how much it's going to cost the fiscus, and South Africa's track record when it comes to the management of state-owned enterprises. I would say I think it's important for us to possibly maybe focus on the SOEs that we do have and getting those things right. I think that would give me a little bit more comfort around, you know, embarking on a state-owned bank. But it does seem that this is something that is in the pipeline. But I do think these are things that we do need to think about. We've got issues already in some of our SOEs. We do have institutions that also do, you know, do lend money. So, you know, you've got the African, you've got the Development Bank, you've got the Land Bank. So, you know, I think you've just got to see what is the reason for us having the state-owned bank. And again, what mechanisms are we going to put in place to ensure that it doesn't become another problem child like an SOE with those contingent liabilities ending up on the balance sheet of the fiscus. So those are just those points.
So that was us. We're talking to Tumisho Greater, who is Novare's economic strategist. I'm just talking a little bit around monetary policy in South Africa, giving us some thoughts around the governor's reappointment to head up the central bank for the next couple of years, together with some thoughts around the monetary policy decision that is set to come out tomorrow. She says that she's sticking her neck out, that we are going to get an interest rate cut, and and she says that, you know, she's standing with South Africans out there. So we are going to see how that's going to happen, because at the moment, the central bank needs to play quite a bit of a balancing act between where the economy needs to go versus the type of pressure that is on consumers at the moment. Tumisho, how can people find you or have access to some of your research or commentary?
Oh, wow. I should probably get more acquainted with social media. Stop living in the dark ages. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Tumisho Greater. Or alternatively, I'm always really keen if you want to drop me an email at tumisho@novari.com. And of course, on different platforms such as yourself, where I've got the opportunity to share my thoughts. And of course, always very willing to engage. And you can also catch me on LinkedIn. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
So that's it for today. Remember that you can find the latest podcasts on Business Live under the title Podcast Business Day Spotlight. On Twitter, we are #BDSpotlight. And then you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. So thank you so much to our amazing team and our producer, that is Paige Muller. My name is Mudiyo Gavaza. So from the rest of the team, it's good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.